Welcome to What the Paper Said, in which I, Patrick Crozier, skim through the Times from 100 years ago, read some of the articles, and comment on the ones I find interesting. In this episode, the week ending the 16th of December 1923, bad news for pigs and other livestock. But I begin with a correction. Last week, I claimed that the recent outbreak of foot and mouth disease had not led to the slaughter of thousands of animals. Balderdash, it had. As the Times reports this week, some 70,000 animals have been killed in an effort to halt the spread of the disease. More on that later. But first, some of the other items that have caught my attention this week. It is no clearer how Britain will be governed with a hung parliament. Meanwhile, there are plenty of recriminations when it comes to how the Conservatives / Unionists managed to lose their majority. Nancy Astor, the first woman to take her seat in Parliament, thinks it is because of the party's treatment of women. Others are looking ahead to a possible constitutional crisis. This is from Saturday the 15th, and it's from a Sir West Ridgeway. A curious delusion seems to possess a great part of the London press, and more mischievous still, or is it mischievous? I'll go for mischievous. The Labour Party. It seems to be believed that the Prime Minister, whoever he may be, has a right to call upon the Sovereign to dissolve Parliament. Of course he has no such right. The dissolution of Parliament is the prerogative of the Sovereign, to be exercised at his own discretion. A minister may advise dissolution, but cannot demand it. Balderdash. Prime Ministers have the de facto right to call a general election whenever they like, then as now. The interesting thing is that there are people like Sir West Ridgeway who feel it necessary to maintain the fiction that it is anything different. Piffle. He goes on. This prerogative, namely refusal of dissolution, has in recent years been repeatedly used by the Sovereign's representatives in the Dominions, and it is very desirable that the Labour Party, before accepting office, should understand that they have no right to demand dissolution. Oh, you jest. Really? I'd be curious to know some examples. It did occur to me that in the Dominions, Governors General might be natives, and therefore in a stronger political position. But to the best of my knowledge, at this time they tended to be shipped out from London. No such constitutional niceties in Germany. This is from Monday the 10th. The Reichstag met yesterday afternoon to vote on the Powers Bill, by which Dr. Marx, the new Chancellor, and his Cabinet are to be absolved of all parliamentary control until February the 15th. So when Hitler passed his Enabling Act, he was to some extent following precedent. There has been a debate on the future of the battleship at the Royal United Services Institute. Some think that the aircraft carrier is the future. Winston Churchill was in court this week. Lord Alfred Douglas, former lover of Oscar Wilde, is on trial for criminal libel. The claim is that Churchill put out a false report about the outcome of the Battle of Jutland in the hope of making a killing on the stock market. Douglas has made similar claims in the past, see the 1st of April and 22nd of September episodes. In the end, Douglas was found guilty and sentenced to 6 months in prison. That's 6 months in the 2nd Division. I'd love to know what that means. I guess it's without hard labour, but I could easily be wrong on that. Here are some people who may end up joining him. This is from Wednesday the 12th. The Tower Bridge Police Court Magistrate yesterday committed for trial on bail Collins Rossiter, 55, nurseryman of Timsbury, near Bath, who is charged with having written a letter containing an obscene libel to a girl living in Rotherhithe. And this is from Friday the 14th. Diana Langham, aged 50, spinster of independent means, was arrested at Coleford in the Forest of Dean yesterday on a charge of sending indecent postcards through the post. It was a thing in those days. Now, which was Britain's biggest railway by turnover in 1923? I hear you ask. Well, good news, I have the answer. This week the Times published the year-to-date receipts of all the main railways. In first place we have London, Midland and Scottish, with 74,677,000 exactly, which is no great surprise considering it serves Birmingham, Manchester, Liverpool and Glasgow. In second, we have LNER, or London North Eastern Railway, on 57,016,000. No surprise, its position is no surprise, given it runs up the east coast of the country. But it is a bit of a surprise, to me at least, that it has about three quarters of the revenue of the LMS. It sounds as if it's doing something right. In third and fourth place, we have GWR on 29 million and Southern on 22 million. And then, quite a long way back, the Underground, or the part of the Underground that isn't the Metropolitan, that's 11 million. Perhaps smaller than you might expect because it was a lot smaller in those days. And finally, the Metropolitan on 1,754,000. I feel I have to say the 754,000 bit because it's so small. The headmaster of Eton made a speech at a secondary school in nearby Windsor. This is from Saturday the 15th. One real danger in this country, so far as he could see, was that of people misunderstanding and disbelieving in the honesty of one another. English politicians were a very much abused class, but he would not change the ordinary English politician of any party for the ordinary politician of any other country. They heard of Tory Labour and Liberal plotting. He did not believe it. They were all nice, honest gentlemen wanting to do the best for their country. Is that true? I wouldn't describe Lloyd George as exactly honest. And the Labour Party programme of 1923 is, as future generations would find out, nonsense on stilts. But Churchill, Asquith, Baldwin, pretty straight sort of guys, as someone once said. This is from Thursday the 13th. We print today an article based on extracts from the final volume of the reminiscences of Field Marshal Conrad von Hertzendorf, which will shortly be published in Vienna. Marshal Conrad was chief of the Austro-Hungarian General Staff at the beginning of the war, and remained in that position until he was dismissed by the Emperor Charles in February 1917. Ever since 1908, Field Marshal Conrad von Hertzendorf, chief of the Austro-Hungarian General Staff, had been clamouring for war against Serbia and for her destruction. He had indeed, famously so, well, amongst those who know about these sorts of things. But why? Two principles were in sharp conflict: the maintenance of Austria as a conglomerate of various nationalities, and the rise of independent national states claiming their ethnic territories from Austria-Hungary. For this reason, Austria-Hungary had to go to war against Serbia. In that narrow sense, von Hertzendorf was quite right. Those two principles of government could not exist side by side. One had to go. Foot and mouth disease is a highly infectious disease of livestock. It produces some rather unpleasant symptoms, but is rarely fatal. It sounds rather like a disease that affects humans that has been in the news in recent years. Even so, it is difficult to see why this might be making the editorial pages of the Times. Possibly it is because the disease causes animals to lose weight. This is from Friday the 14th. The return of the disease, so soon after the big outbreak in the early part of last year, and with still more injurious effects, is extremely disappointing. In 1922, the outbreak, though no less severe while it lasted, was checked in a comparatively short space of time. Since then, the Ministry of Agriculture have spared no pains to get at the root of the matter, in order to be ready to deal with any future emergencies that might arise. It is now nearly a year since the departmental committee, whom they appointed to investigate the whole problem, issued their report. Rather quicker than the present-day COVID inquiry, which has only just started. And during the present crisis, the regulations based on its conclusions have been scrupulously observed. Every possible precaution, in fact, has been taken. Everything that knowledge and experience can suggest has been done to stop the ravages of the disease. And yet, so far, none of the measures adopted appears to have produced any tangible result. That sounds familiar. In view of the gravity of the situation, it is not therefore altogether surprising that the suggestion has been made that since in this particular instance the policy of slaughtering the diseased animals has proved ineffective, it ought to be dropped. The 1920s equivalent of our lockdown sceptics. Fortunately, however, there is not the least chance that such a suggestion will be carried out. The whole weight of the agricultural opinion of the country is against it. The difficulty cannot be met by running away from it. It rather depends on who's doing the running. The government is not known for its ability to solve problems. In the last 2 days, the Royal Agricultural Society and the Council of Agriculture for England have emphatically declared that in their view the present policy of the Ministry of Agriculture is the only right policy and must be continued. It is undoubtedly true, as Lord Northbrook has pointed out, no idea who this guy is, some panjandrum, that unless the country faces the position now and pays the money necessary for compulsory slaughter, the disease may become endemic here, as it is on the continent. The real alternative, as Sir Robert Sanders said yesterday, again, no idea, is not between slaughter and isolation, but between slaughter and letting the thing rip. That has a familiar ring to it. Wasn't Boris Johnson supposed to have said something very similar at the outset of the COVID epidemic? And it would appear that his instinct was right. In 31 years up to last March, foot and mouth disease has only cost the country £1 million, whereas the loss every year to farmers in Holland is 2.5 times as large. Well, just a minute. That sounds awfully like taking money from taxpayers and giving it to farmers. How the disease finds its way into this island, no one really knows. According to Wikipedia, it is probably infected meat and livestock from abroad. This all sounds very fishy and very familiar to me. Here we have a disease which, while highly infectious, is not particularly deadly. And yet the coercive power of the state is being used to not only destroy private property, but to transfer wealth from one group, taxpayers, to another, farmers. And by the way, much the same formula was applied in the outbreaks of 1967 and 2001. Anyway, that's all for this week. I aim to have something up next week, but I promise nothing.